All right. Good morning, everyone. Let's begin. So I know last week we had mentioned that we're going to do another shiur on Perek Nun Gimel, chapter 53. But in fact, we're going to go to chapter 54, Perek Nun Dalet, this week. So let's begin. First of all, the class is sponsored by the Goldenberg, Retches, and Nachman families in loving memory of Drezel Nechama Bas Chaim Edel, and by Dana Walk in memory of her beloved mother Debbie Saltzman, Devora Bas Tzvi Hirsch. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshamas have an Aliyah and the families on the Chama. So let's begin. We'll take a quick look at Kapitel Nun Dalet, a quick look at chapter 54. L'Natzeach B'Neginos Maskil L'David. For the conductor, again, we've discussed again the conductor before. B'Neginos, according to most of the opinions, most of the Mefarshim, is referring to a particular type of instrument that David HaMelech is instructing be used for this particular capital, Maskil LeDavid. Now remember again, we've spoken about before, when David HaMelech begins a particular chapter of Tehillim with the word Maskil, so what does Maskil mean? Right, Seichel, good, and therefore what? I don't want to have to begin from 7 years ago again, right? Remember, Maskil, that appellation always means that David HaMelech says there's a profound life lesson to be learned in this kapitel. Remember again, different kapitlach of Tehillim, different chapters of Tehillim serve different purposes. Some of them are to go ahead and recount for us the turbulent events of David HaMelech's life. Some of them are to teach us certain historical lessons. Some are to teach us certain future lessons. But there are some kapitlach that David HaMelech says contain life-altering cathartic lessons. Whenever David HaMelech wants to introduce us to such a kapitel, he often uses the word maskil. There's a lesson here. There is something profound here that if we absorb it, if we understand it, it could be life-changing. So we'll see. We're going to learn that lesson together. So a little bit of context. Bevo azifim pasuk beis. Bevo azifim v'yomer l'shavit halo David mistater imanu. So this is one of those kapitlach where David HaMelech tells us when exactly or at what point in his life he composed this particular chapter. Remember again, we've seen throughout our journey through Tehillim that David HaMelech's kapitlach were often composed in response to something, whether it's an external event, some type of internal stirrings of David HaMelech, and every once in a while, David HaMelech makes explicit reference to the particular event which sparked the particular kapitel. So in this kapitel, David HaMelech says, I wrote this, bevo hazifim. When the zifim came along, we'll discuss this story in just a moment, vayomer l'shaul, and they told Shaul, hallo David mistater imanu, that David is hiding with us. Let's read through the rest of the most of the kapitel, then we'll go back to the story. Pasuk gimel, Elokim b'shim choshini bevo hasate dineni. O God, with your name save me, and with your might avenge me. Elokim shma tfilos yechlish baruch hu, hear my tfilos. Ha'azina le'imrefi, listen to the words that are coming out of my mouth. Kiz pasakei, kizorim kamu alai, ve'aritzim bikshu nafshi, lo samu elokim le'negdam selah. Because David HaMelech says, for strangers rose up upon me, violent men sought my soul, they did not place God before me forever. Pasuk vav, hinei elokim ozer li, Hashem b'som, but the Ribbono Shalom helps me. Even when I am betrayed by everyone else, even when everyone else turns their back on me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always here for me. Yashiv hara l'shorirai, l'sorai, excuse me, b'mitchatz misem, b'nedava ez b'chalach, o deshimcha Hashem kitov, ki mikol tzara hitzilani, o ba'ayvai ra'asa eni. And if we just skip to the last pasuk, for I will give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for he saved me from every distress, and my eye saw my enemies. So what is the theme? Obviously, I'm not doing justice to the words, but what's the theme of the kapitel? What's the theme of the chapter? So remember, Hashem saves me is only the end of the story. Remember, what's the theme of this kapitel, which is the dominant theme of many of the kapitlach of David HaMelech's Tehillim, is a feeling of betrayal. A feeling of those who I loved most, those who I put my trust in, have always turned their back on me. Now this is an exceptionally important idea. We've spoken about this before. The reason why David HaMelech speaks so much about betrayal, now David HaMelech experiences betrayal in a very acute form. But he also is trying to sensitize us to the idea that a feeling of betrayal, or perhaps better stated, being let down in our relationships, is par for the course. What do I mean by that? So sometimes a person feels let down by someone who they love. It could be in any life relationship. It could be in a marriage, or it could be in a friendship, or it could be with parents, or it could be with children, or it could be with friends. And inevitably it happens. Why does that happen? Because relationships are forged between people. People are inherently imperfect. which means that by definition, all of us fail. The same way that we fail in our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? We commit averos. I'm not going to take a show of hands. But again, we all make mistakes. So I fail. I fail in that relationship. So just like I fail in my relationship with God, I fail in my human relationships as well. That's why, again, the secret to success in all human relationships is an acceptance of failure. Sometimes, again, especially in the realm of Shalom Bayis, there are so many problems that come up because the expectations that one spouse has for the other are so unrealistic. We go sometimes into relationships expecting perfection from the other. And there's one thing that's clear. If you expect perfection, there's only one thing that you're guaranteed, and that's what? That you will be profoundly disappointed. And by the way, that's not a reflection on your spouse or on your friend or anyone else. That's a reflection on human beings. Human beings are imperfect. It's the same if HaKadosh Baruch Hu expected perfection from me, I would disappoint HaKadosh Baruch Hu each and every day. The great news is, He doesn't expect perfection from me or from any of us. All He expects from us is effort. All He expects from us is that today should just be a little bit better than yesterday, and tomorrow should just be a little bit better than today. So there's this constant theme of feeling disappointment, but not in a normal relationship way. Meaning disappointment, part of successful relationships means knowing how to weather the disappointments and the failures of others. You know, there are some times in a relationship where, and again, you could plug in whatever life relationship you want to, but sometimes people bear with them the ongoing pain of the disappointments and the failures of others. So, a simple example. So, a spouse fails another spouse. So, what happens? So, sometimes, again, they'll have a falling out, and then what occurs? They make up, Baruch Hashem, and one forgives the other. But you know, sometimes marital forgiveness is an interesting thing. And sometimes what marital forgiveness means is, I forgive you for now, until when? No, I'm not saying it's a group of ladies. I'm just saying, in general, you know, and I'll forgive you for now until the next time you mess up. And the next time you mess up, I will chronologically, right, alphabetically, tell you every single thing you've done wrong. Even, by the way, even before we got married, right, from the time you were born, I didn't even know you yet. But I did my due diligence, I did my research as such, I could point out every single thing you've done wrong. I'll categorize it. These are severe things, less severe things, forgivable, unforgivable. Again, alphabetical, chronological, however you want it. So, of course, again, you recognize that when a person, and we all do this, when you walk around with that in life, that's why many of us have difficulty forging meaningful and loving relationships. Because if you're carrying around pain, if you're carrying around anger, carrying around resentment of the failures of the other, and I can never let that go, then it's always difficult to form any type of real emotional connection. And that's to a spouse, it's to a friend, it's to a parent, it's to everyone. Failure is part of the fabric of the human condition. It's part of our relationships. And to forge meaningful relationships, a person has to accept the people who love me will fail me. You should have to accept it as a reality. It doesn't matter how much the person loves you. They will fail you. And then my obligation is to figure out how to forgive, to let go of that failure, recognizing that failure is not a manifestation of lack of love for me. That failure is a manifestation of the other's humanity. I accept it, I forgive it, and I move on. David HaMelech is referring to something different over here. What David HaMelech is referring to over here is a feeling of betrayal, of placing your trust in someone, them telling you that they're going to honor that bond, that commitment of trust, and then a betrayal afterwards. So David, and again, we'll discuss the specific example that David HaMelech is giving. And this leads David HaMelech to really one basic truth, which is the only thing that you could fully put your trust in this world is the Ribono Shel Olam. Everyone else in life will fail you. Some purposely, some unintentionally, some maliciously, some lovingly. But all of our human relationships have elements of failure embedded into them. And by the way, the sooner one accepts this, the happier one could be in life. Because at the end of the day, if you accept failure as part of the fabric of your human relationships, then you learn to readjust expectations. And when you learn to readjust expectations, then you could have harmonious unions. So this leads David HaMelech to one incredible yisod. And David HaMelech, we learned this together. That's why David HaMelech says, we said it for a whole month on David Hashem Uri V'Yishi. What does David say? Ki avi v'imi azavuni v'Hashem ya'asveni. My mother and my father, they leave me, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes in and collects me. So the first one said, what is David Melech saying? So on a basic level, what he's saying is, one day my parents die. One day my parents die. Those who gave me life, one day will no longer be here. But even when they are not here, you will be. On a deep level, David Melech is saying is, my parents represent the first relationship of trust that I have in this world. Even at some point in time, my parents will betray that trust. Not intentionally, hopefully, not purposely, not maliciously, but as we know, as children, and as we come to know as parents, parents fail. Parents fail. So David HaMelech says, Ki avi v'imi azavuni. Sometimes even my parents abdicate their paternal and maternal responsibilities. V'Hashem Yaseh Boshalom, the one entity in my life that never fails me, that never betrays me, is you. You, Ribono Shel Olam, are always the constant. Now again, does that mean I like everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does? Not necessarily. Does it mean that I'm happy with everything that God creates for me in my life? Maybe not. But at the end of the day, I know that even when things don't go right, it's not a failure in the relationship. It's not a failure of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's my lack of understanding of certain things. So let's bring this back to here. So what is David HaMelech referring to? See, he says, Bevo Azifim. If you look at number two, so the Radak says, Bevo Azifim, Anshei Zif. So remember again, a little bit of context. David HaMelech is anointed by Shmuel HaNavi as the king. There's only one problem, which is there's a sitting king, Shaul HaMelech, who also happens to be the Shver, also happens to be his father-in-law, is sitting on the throne. So David HaMelech has a huge problem because God has said, I don't want Shaul anymore, I just want you. But David HaMelech will not take the throne by force. He will not go to war against his father-in-law. It's not just his father-in-law. He won't lift up a sword against another Jew. He will not spark civil war. So instead, he chooses to flee. He runs. So he's on the run from Shaul for a significant amount of time, hiding out in different places. Now, in the beginning, no one really knows what's going on. And David HaMelech's cover story is, I'm just on a secret mission from the king, right? And people buy it. If it's a secret mission, people don't ask too many questions. But then as word gets out, people realize that there's incredible friction between David and Shaul. David goes to hide in a place called Ziph. That's the name of the city. So where was Ziph? So the Radak says, V'humakom b'gvul b'nei Yehuda. This was a city within the tribal portion of Yehuda. Why is David HaMelech hiding out in the tribal portion of Yehuda? Remember, it's his Shevet. David HaMelech is from Shevet Yehuda. So these are his landsmen. This is his family. So even though, again, he is not broadcasting what is going on, but he figures he'll find safety and security within his own tribal portion. See, he goes ahead and he hides there. Take a look at number three. What happens? So David HaMelech tells the people of Ziph, listen, can I lay low here? Is it okay if I hide here? You'll keep my confidence. The people of Ziph say, of course. Number three. Vayavo hazifim el shol. So this is Shmuel Aleph. The zifim come to shol. Leymar. Halo David nistater begivas achachilo apnea yishimon. And then what happens? The people of Ziph turn David in. David's own brothers. Not literally, but tribally. David's own mishpacha turns in David to Shaul. Why did the Zifim do this? Who knows? Maybe they were afraid. Maybe there was some material reward. Whatever it was, they turned on him. They turned on him and they come to Shaul. Shaul, we just want to tell you, David is hiding in the midst of our city. Vayakam Shaul vayered al midbar Zif, v'ito shloshes alofim ish bachur Yisrael levakesh estav midbar Zif. Shaul mobilizes a small army, 3,000 soldiers. Remember, David HaMelech has 300 soldiers with him, right? At most, Shaul goes ahead and mobilizes an army of 3,000 soldiers to go and find David. So what happens? So David HaMelech ultimately realizes that the people of Ziph turned him in, that they told Shaul that he's hiding, and David HaMelech reacts. Number four. So let me just say a little bit of this outside. So now David realizes that Shaul is marching on Ziph. David's not going to wait for Shaul to come. So what happens? Shaul can't make the trip from his home to Ziph in one day. So what he does is, with his army of 3,000 men, they camp out a little bit away from Ziph. David sends a reconnaissance team, and he sees Shaul's army is camping not so far away from Ziph. So what happens? Number four. Vayakam David vayavol amakam ashachana shashol. Vayar David es amakam ashashach av sham shol v'abner bener sartzvo v'shol shochi b'ma'agav v'am chonim sivivosav. So David, and we'll see, David is with one of his soldiers, right? Achimelech Achiti and Avishai ben Tzruya, and they come upon Shaul's camp, and they come upon a most dramatic scene, which is Shaul is sleeping. He's surrounded by some of his soldiers, but guess what? The soldiers are sleeping as well. No one is awake in the entire camp of Shaul. David, together with Avishai, go down into the camp. Avishai says to David, David, do you see the Hashkacha Pratis? Do you see divine providence? God has delivered Shaul right into your hands. What should you do? Kill him. Does David HaMelech have a right to kill Shaul? Of course he does. Right? First of all, Shaul's a rodef. Shaul's running after him. God no longer wants Shaul to be king. David is within his right. David HaMelech says, I will not cast my hand against Shaul. I won't cast my hand against the anointed king. I won't cast my hand against my father-in-law. By the way, father-in-law, Shaul has already given away David HaMelech's wife to another man. It's a separate story. But I'm not going to cast my hand. I'm not going to fight against another Jew. I'm not going to do it. So what does David do? David takes the shield and the sword of the king, and he retreats back up to the mountaintop. Number five. Hello, son Abner. So essentially David calls out from the top of the mountain, smart man, a safe distance away, but he essentially calls out, and first of all, he gives Musar to the soldiers of Shaul. He says, what kind of soldiers are you? Right? I just crept into your camp undetected. You're supposed to protect the king, and here you guys are all just sleeping. You're all just sleeping. So he gives Musar. But then what does he do? He holds up the sword of the king. He holds up the flask of water that he took from the king, and he says, my dear king, I could have killed you if I wanted to. I could have taken your life if I wanted to. Do you now understand that I'm not a threat to you? You're running after me because you think I'm going to seize your kingdom. You're running after me because you think that I'm a threat to the continuity of your monarchy. You're running after me because you think I don't want to kill you. Vahari, the proof to that is if I wanted you dead, then what? Then what? You'd be dead already. I don't want the throne. Remember, David HaMelech did not apply for the job. David HaMelech did not want the job. We've learned enough of Tehillim that the only job that David HaMelech ever wanted was to be a shepherd. All he wanted to be was David HaMelech did not want to deal with people because he was hurt by many, many people, including his own family. David HaMelech loved being with the animals. Not because he was a big fan of the animals, but the great part about animals is they don't talk back, they don't betray your confidence, they don't hurt your feelings, and they never let you down. So David HaMelech was happy to just be in the field with the sheep, him and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to talk to Hashem, to daven to Hashem, to sing to Hashem. I don't want the job, Shaul. I don't want the job. I'm not looking to do anything to you. So please, just leave me alone. Look at number six. Vayomer. Lama ze Adoni rodef acharei avdo. Kima sisi uma biyadi ra. Says David, why are you running after me? Va'ato yishmana Adoni HaMelech es divrei avdo. Im Hashem es siska ki yarach mincha vim babni adam ruruhim lefnei Hashem ki gershoni yom mistapech panachal asa shani mor. Leich avor al kilom achirin. Va'ato ayipol demi ba'artso minegi p'nei Hashem. So David, please. See, what David realizes, Shaul, if you keep this up, you will be successful and you will kill me for one simple reason. I'm not going to kill you. I will never lift my hand against you. And even if it's a choice between losing my own life and saving myself at your expense, I'm not going to kill you. So if you keep up with this, the time will come and you will be successful, you'll be alive and I'll be dead. But for what? For what? Why do this? I'm not a threat to you. I'm not looking to take anything from you. I'm not after your throne. I'm not after your crown. I'm not after your job. I'm not after anything of yours. All I want is to live in peace. Number seven. Vayomer Shaul, Chatasi Shuv B'ni David. This is actually a very beautiful pasuk. So Shaul HaMelech says, I am so sorry, my son David. Kilo arlocha otachas asher yakar nafshi beinecha ayom hazeh. Hine yiskalti ve'eshke harbei ma'od. I've made many mistakes. I don't know why I have this animosity towards you. You know, sometimes people in life have a moment of clarity. You know, Shaul, what was Shaul? Shaul was ill. I don't mean in a clinical way. I mean like, he was, what was Shaul's illness? What was his problem? It's an illness that many people suffer from. It's the illness of everything is someone else's fault. Shaul, when Shaul looked at now the fact that there was another king, he knew that Shmuel anointed David. He did anything and everything but take ownership over his circumstances. It was always someone else. It's David's fault. It's Yonasan's fault. It's God's fault. It's Shmuel's fault. And meanwhile, he assigned blame everywhere and anywhere else by taking ownership of it for himself. So one thing is clear, which is if you don't own your problems, if you don't own your challenges, but you just find the next person to blame, you could certainly bank on one thing, which is nothing will ever change. You will be struggling with the same exact problems tomorrow and next year and in 20 years from now. The only time change occurs in life is when you take ownership over your circumstances. Shaul has this moment of clarity in this pasuk. And Shaul says, it's not you. David, my son, it's not you. You're not the problem. I'm the problem. I have to fix me. I have to fix what's broken in me. I have to address my deficiencies. I have to address my frailties. I have to find happiness from within. You're not the problem. So it's this incredible moment of incredible, like, luminescent clarity where a person, after so much time of deluding themselves that my problems are always because of someone else, says, you know what? It's not really someone else. Now maybe other people stoke the flames a little bit. Maybe other people contribute to the problems a little bit. But the problems that I have in life often are my own creation. The problems I have in life often are because of me. And therefore, the good news is, if I made them and I created them, I could also fix them. So the idea, Shaul has this moment of incredible clarity where he says, David, my son, such a beautiful term, my son, it's not you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for the pain I've caused you. I'm sorry for the difficulties I've caused you. I've projected all of my issues upon you. You became the lightning rod for anything and everything that was wrong in my life, that was wrong with me. And the truth is, it wasn't you. It was never you. And it really has nothing to do with you. You're just the lightning rod for me to go ahead and project my problems onto. But at the end of the day, the issues are mine. And from this moment on, I pledge to deal with them. He goes on. Look at the last pasuk in number 7. Vayomer Shaul al David, Baruch ata bini David. Look at these beautiful words. Blessed are you, my son David. Gam asot ta'aseh, v'gam yachol tuchal. You should be successful in everything you do. Vayelech David ledarko, v'shaul shav limkomo. David HaMelech goes on his way. Shaul goes on his way, you know, which is an incredible idea also. Reconciliation sometimes doesn't mean that you become best friends. Sometimes reconciliation means, okay, hatzlacha, you go your way, I go my way, because perhaps the combination is a bit combustible. So Shaul doesn't invite David, why don't you come back home, we'll eat dinner together, we'll get the family together. That far we're not going to go, but at least, again, let's not try to kill each other. So you go your way, I'll go my way. An incredible moment of reconciliation. What's the problem? It lasts for about a pasuk. Because the next chapter, Shaul once again is enraged with David HaMelech, with David. He's undermining me, he's trying to steal my throne. So first of all, it's an incredible lesson. It's not our topic, but why is that? See, in life, when you have a moment of clarity, if you don't act on that moment, if you don't do something concrete, the feelings of clarity dissipate as quickly as they came. You know, Rabbi Yitzhak Rabbeditchev discusses this yisod. I think I mentioned this before. The Rebbe says that, you know, sometimes we have moments of inspiration I feel uplifted, a moment of inspiration. So the Rebbe says, when you feel inspired, he gives an example, a person should open up a Chumash and learn a Pasuk in Chumash. Open up a Tillim, say a Pasuk in Tillim. Why? Because the Rebbe says something amazing. He says, you know, inspiration is a fleeting feeling. It comes quickly and it leaves quickly. But if you take the feeling and you plug it into something concrete, I learn a Pasuk in Chumash, I say a Kapitel of Tillim, I dive in one tefillah with extra Kavanah, I give Tzedakah, I do an act of Chesed, then even when the feeling is gone, the action is still there. The pasuk is there. The tzedakah is there. The chesed is there. The maisa, the action, the concrete action is still in existence. The problem that Shaul had is, Shaul has this incredible moment of clarity. This incredible moment of like a luminescent clarity, a realization of, my problems are not because of David. My problems are not because of my second grade teacher. My problems are not because my mother didn't love me enough, or my father didn't do this, or my wife didn't do... That's not my problem. My problem is me. My problem is me. The problem is, he didn't follow up on it. He didn't act on it. He didn't go ahead and say, okay, now that the problem is me, what things do I have to change in my lifestyle now? What has to change this moment? And when you don't act upon these feelings of luminescent clarity, they dissipate. They simply go away. And you're back where you were before that moment of understanding. So Shaul doesn't act on that moment, and therefore it dissipates. So next chapter, he's once again running after David HaMelech, ready to kill him, because once again, David is the root of all of my problems. David HaMelech is the root. He's not. He's not the root of your problems. But at the end of the day, again, Shaul, who doesn't take action, doesn't take ownership, is once again back at this. But the nature of this kapitel, if you notice, is not really as much about Shaul. There are other kapitel that speak about Shaul, but it's about the Zifim. Because for David HaMelech, what the Zifim represented was what? Another betrayal. Another betrayal. Now remember, we've spoken about extensively in our past year, in the past. Somebody mentioned to me that this is our sixth year or seventh year of Tillim. I thought it was our third year. But okay, but we have memory issues. Okay, good. In any event, it's just more... The longer it is, the more embarrassing is that we're only up to the 53rd chapter. But, okay, so, thank you. Okay, good, wonderful. Thank you for bolstering my ego. I appreciate it. So, we've learned many times about David HaMelech's feelings of betrayal that already started from his childhood. Remember, again, David HaMelech was, mistreated by his own family. Meaning, this becomes apparent. If you remember again, we don't know, we're not introduced as much to David HaMelech in his childhood. The first real introduction comes about when God tells Shmuel HaNavi, go to the house of Yishai, for I have chosen one of the sons of Yishai as king. So Shmuel shows up at the house, he tells Yishai, assemble all of your sons. Right? And he assembles all of his boys, and Shmuel HaNavi goes through each of them. And God says, no, this one's great, but not king. And they're all great. Great, 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 but not king. So he's at the end of the line, and no one's the king. So he says to Yishai, like, what's going on over here? Is there someone else? Is there another son? And Yishai says, no. Remember, no. At first, Yishai says, no, this is it. Shmuel says, are you sure? Are you sure? Because I'm pretty sure I have the right address. Meaning, God told me it's one of your kids. Are you sure there's not a son? Can you imagine this? Can you imagine this? He has to press Yishai. He says, oh yeah. There is the other one, but he's a kid. Now, I'm just saying, he doesn't just say he's a kid in a young way. Yishai, it doesn't even register in Yishai's mind that David is even part of this equation. We see the way David HaMelech's brothers speak to him, again, in a dismissive, disparaging tone. David HaMelech grows up in a very difficult situation. You know, sometimes the worst form of abuse is neglect. And the worst form of abuse sometimes, again, and when I say neglect, not that somebody doesn't feed you, not that someone doesn't clothe you, but they don't pay attention to you. They're not machshiv you. They don't make you feel important. They don't make you feel special. They don't make you feel like you're worth anything. This is the home that David HaMelech grows up in. This is the home that he grows up in. Now, to his credit, David HaMelech also teaches us that we need not be defined by the deficiencies of our upbringing, which is another, there's a lot going on over here, but, you know, there's another incredible yisod. You know, you don't choose the family you're born into. It's absolutely true. But you also don't have a license to therefore define yourself by the shortcomings of your family. You don't have the right. You have to overcome it. You have to transcend. We all have challenges. Life is about transcending those challenges. David HaMelech is the perfect example of it. So David HaMelech's betrayals in life begin already when he's a young boy. And they continue throughout his life. There is no time in life without Malchus HaNatz. So the Zifim is another one. Another one. Another one. Now, when a person suffers repeated trauma, so sometimes every single traumatic episode is amplified. Why is it amplified? Because what it does is it reinforces this idea that once again I'm being taken advantage of. Once again I'm being hurt. Once again I'm being put in a painful situation. So David HaMelech, who are the Zifim? Nobody cares about the Zifim. Who are they? And in the grand scheme of David HaMelech's life, why do they even get a kapitel? Because for David HaMelech, Bevo HaZifim, Vayomer L'Shol, Halo David Mistater Imanu. Why did you betray me? Why did you betray me? I asked you. I wasn't going to imperil you. If you told me that I couldn't have safe residence in your city, I would have moved on. I'm not looking at putting anyone in danger. But I asked you, could I come? And I asked you ultimately again, could I have your confidence? And I asked you, could I reside here for a little while? And you told me yes. And you promised me that you would keep my staying here a secret. You promised me that you would give me shelter, safety, security. And you betrayed me. Why did you betray me? Now, by the way, the Pesukim themselves don't tell us why the Zifim betrayed David. Was it fear? Was it money? Was it allegiance to the king? Whatever it was. But it's okay if they would have said from the beginning, sorry, we don't harbor criminals. Okay? David Melch would have moved on to the next place. But you gave me your word, and you betrayed me. And it's this episode that then leads to another act of betrayal. Shaul, you told me we're good. You told me that you're owning your mistakes, that you're owning your circumstances. You told me that let's go our own way, but let's live b'shalom. And once again, you betray me. Which leads David HaMelech to write this kapitel, where the theme ultimately is, people betray one another. People betray one another. They do. It's just the way that it happens. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you are the constant and consistent rock. You are the constant and consistent anchor in my life. One thing I could count on from you is that you will never, ever betray me. So the question that then comes up is the following. You know, unfortunately, there are people who often feel betrayed by others. But generally, what happens when a person suffers a series of betrayals or let down from other people? There's a lack of trust. People often become bitter. Bitter, and it's certainly understandable, not advisable, but understandable. If you're hurt enough in life, so you become cynical, you become sarcastic, you become guarded. You don't let people in because you're afraid of making yourself vulnerable. That's what happens, and you repeat it. But here's the amazing part. David HaMelech retains this beautiful sensitivity, this beautiful ability to love, this beautiful ability to make himself vulnerable, this beautiful ability to forge relationships, despite the repeated acts of betrayal. So the question is, how? Because if we could figure this out for ourselves, it allows us to forge meaningful relationships even after we've suffered hurt. So how is David HaMelech able to keep this proper disposition despite the repeated betrayals in life? Remember again, how do you know that David HaMelech is hurt by the Zifim? How do you know that David HaMelech is hurt by Shaul? How do you know? Because he felt it important enough to record it in a chapter of Tehillim that he intended to be something for Klal Yisrael for all eternity. If it hurt me, there's plenty of stuff that happened in David HaMelech's life that he did not write about in Tehillim. Tehillim is not a storybook. We don't know everything about David HaMelech's life. So there are certain things that he chose to record. So obviously, this hurt him enough. And it's not that the Zifim betrayed him worse than anyone else. It came on the heels of a number of other betrayals. And it opens the door for another betrayal from Shaul. And yet, despite all of that, David HaMelech never becomes cynical. David HaMelech never becomes sarcastic. David HaMelech never loses his faith, which is what happens to people who feel let down in relationships. They become cynical, sarcastic, don't make themselves vulnerable, stop believing in the goodness of people and the goodness of themselves, and goodness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yet David HaMelech retains this incredible disposition, despite all of the betrayals. How? So to answer this, we're going to take a little bit from last week's parasha. So take a look at number 8, and we're going to tie this back to the kapitel. So in Parshas Lech Lecha, there's an amazing statement that's recorded that at first glance seems to be relatively unnecessary. So remember, just to give you context, Avraham Avinu gets to Canaan, And when he gets to Canaan, he finds that there's regional famine. He decides to go ahead and relocate to Mitzrayim. Whether it was a good move to go to Mitzrayim, not a good move to go to Mitzrayim, is a machlokes, a dispute among the commentaries. Not for today, but he goes. He goes down to Egypt. Has a little bit of a falling out with the Pharaoh. Right? Again, really centered around Sarai Imenu. And he's kicked out of Egypt. So what happens? Torah is now describing his ascent from Egypt back into Canaan. So the pasuk says, "Vayilech lemasaf." He went. Now, "Leilech masaf" literally means he went on his journeys. Minegev ad beisav ad makom hashahayeshem alo betchila bein beisav lo bein ha'ay. So this phrase, "Vayilech lemasaf," he went on his journey, seems to be extraneous. Just tell me, Avraham Avinu went back to Canaan. What do you mean, Vayelech Lamasov? So Rashi has an interesting approach. Rashi says, Vayelech Lamasov, Kishechazer Mimitzrayim Le'eretz Canaan, Hayaholech Velan Bach Sanyos Shalon Baim Bahalichasel Mitzrayim. The interesting point that when Avraham Avinu went back from Mitzrayim to Canaan, so he stayed at the same inns, the same hotels that he stayed at on the way down. Meaning you can't make the journey from Canaan to Mitzrayim in one shot, especially when you're traveling with a family with belongings. So when he came down from Canaan to Mitzrayim, he stayed at inns, however many. When he went back from Mitzrayim to Canaan, he made sure to stay at the same exact places. What's the obvious question? Who cares? Okay, fine. That's interesting, right? We'll put in the AAA book, you know, for ratings. Avram stayed here twice. It's fantastic. But at the end of the day, what does this matter to me? So the Gemara says something amazing, and not only that. Look what the Gemara says. Number 10. Amar Yehuda Marav. The Gemara says, "Erchin minayim shalei shana adam achsayin shlo bina Torah." How do we know? The Gemara learns out a biblical precept from this. That how do we know that if you're journeying and you happen to be taking the same trip, right, back and forth, or you take the same trip and repeat it successive ways, how do you know that you should always try to stay at the same places, the same inns? Where do we know that from? Rabbi Yosef Yuchanina Omer Vayelech Lamasa. We learn from Avraham Avinu. So not only is Torah giving us what appears to be an unnecessary piece of information, but it actually for us tells us a halacha. The Gemara says it's a halacha that you should try to stay in the same hotels. It doesn't apply to Hiltons and things like that. This is talking about like a bed and breakfast. This is talking about like inns where there was a personal connection with the innkeeper. So when you travel, you should try to stay in the same places. Okay. Why? So if you look at number 11, the Gur Ari, the Maharal says something quite beautiful. The Maharal says, Shlo lehotzi laza balabayis, shera bo davara, shlo yirta lezarech etzlo. So the Maharal says a very simple idea. The Maharal says something very beautiful, that what would happen if Avraham Avinu, when he was coming back from Mitzrayim to Canaan, would stay in different inns, what would people say? What would people say? Oh, it must have been that he didn't have a good experience on the way down. So now he's staying in and that's why he's staying in a different place. Therefore, in order not to cast aspersions on the hospitality of the innkeeper, Avraham Avinu was careful to only stay in the same exact inns. And therefore, the Gemara says that when possible, always make sure to give proper cover to your host. So if you stayed somewhere and it was good, stay there again. This way, no one should ever think that you changed your location or you changed your lodging, you changed your accommodations because of a lack of hospitality on behalf of the host. Why is this important? Because what the Torah HaKadosh is teaching us is something absolutely amazing. Avraham Avinu is on a mission from God. Right? Avraham Avinu is still on the Lech Lecha mission. His job is to spread monotheism in every place that he can. His job is to teach people. His job is to inspire people. He is literally on a mission from God. Avraham Avinu would have been within his right to say what? To say what? I'm on a mission from God. I'm going to stay wherever I need to stay. Wherever is most convenient, wherever is easiest, I mean, he's not yet Jewish, but wherever is cheapest, right? I'm going to stay wherever I can. And the truth is, what's most important is that at the end of the day, it's what's convenient for me. I don't care about the feelings of the balabos. I don't care about the feelings of the innkeeper. That's not the priority right now. What's the priority for me is to fulfill my mission of God. Comes HaKadosh Baruch Hu, comes Avraham Avinu and teaches us, no, that even if you are on a mission from God, you must be ever vigilant with the feelings of the other. There is no such thing as a person who is so important that they are above caring about the feelings of the other. There is no such thing as a person who is engaged in something that is so heilig, that is so holy, that is so important, that I don't have to care about the ripple effect or the ramifications of my actions on someone else. Even if you're Avram Avinu, even if God is speaking to you, even if God is telling you, Lech Lecha, you must be ever cognizant and vigilant that your pursuit of God does not have a negative effect on the other. And this is an incredible yisod, because sometimes people make the terrible mistake of thinking that as long as I'm serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu and I'm trying to grow my ruchnius, I could trample upon whoever is in my way. And I could take liberties with whoever is in my way. And I could talk up to certain people in certain ways because they're not on my level or they're not on my growth trajectory. A Jew, a son or a daughter of Avram Avinu, is never permitted to take liberties with their interpersonal conduct. God may be whispering in your ear, I need you to get to this place. That's fine. Ribbono shel Olam, I'm going to get there, but I'm going to do it in a way that never tramples upon the dignity or the honor of the other. No matter what you are engaged in life, no matter how holy it may be, we are never permitted to take liberties with the dignity of the other. You know, there's an amazing story that's told that one time the Beis Halevi, Beis Halevi was Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. One time he was visiting Rav Yaakov Gesundheit. Rav Yaakov Gesundheit was the chief rabbi of Warsaw. What was his name? Gesundheit. Rav Yaakov was the chief rabbi of Warsaw. He lived from 1815 to 1878. So the Beis Halevi was sitting in, the chief rabbi of Warsaw was living in the chief rabbi of Warsaw. Warsaw was a major Jewish community. Baruch Hashem, the chief rabbi was affluent. The community made sure that he had a very beautiful life. So they're sitting in like the parlor in the living room, and Rav Yaakov Gesundheit had cleaning help in the house. So the cleaning lady was in the next room over, and she was singing. She was singing. So Rav Yaakov Gesundheit gets up. It's an issue of Kol Isha. There was an issue for a man to hear a woman singing. So Rav Yaakov Gesundheit got up and was about to tell her, can you please not sing? The Beis Halevi grabbed his arm. Beis Halevi says, leave her alone. We can go speak somewhere else. We can move our conversation somewhere else. She's a cleaning lady. No one ever grows up and says, when I grow up, I want to be a cleaning lady. No one ever grows up and says, my aspiration is to clean other people's stuff. So most probably she's doing this because this is what she can do, and she ekes by a livelihood for herself and for her family. And probably the only simcha she has throughout her day is when she sings a little bit to herself. You and I could just as easily go to a different room and continue our conversation without disrupting her. That's a gadol. That's a gadol. Would he have been within his right to say, please stop singing? It would have been within his right. But as we often say, just because something is within your right does not mean that it is right. So meaning it's within his right to tell her, please stop singing. You know, it's an issue. It's my home. It's Kol Isha. But at the end of the day, if I could just as easily allow her to do what makes her happy and also go out, I'll move. I'll get up. I'll move somewhere else. Excuse me. That's the sensitivity of a Jew. That's the sensitivity, ultimately, again, of a child of Avram Avinu. That at the end of the day, I am always vigilant. I want to guarantee you one thing. The Beis Halevi and Rav Yaakov Gesundheit, we're not talking about sports scores. And they weren't talking about, where did you pick up that frock? That is beautiful. I guarantee you, they were not talking about anything mundane. Whatever they were talking about, I guarantee you, were Dvarim Ha'omdim Berumo Shel Olam. Exceptionally important things. Yet the Gadol Hadar said, let her sing. I'm not going to sit here and listen to it. I can't do that. But I could get up and move. So sometimes, again, it's about ensuring that your pursuit of religious growth never infringes upon the happiness and upon the well-being of the other. But that's not what we're going to focus on. Take a look at number 12. That's just a bonus. Take a look at number 12. So the Zohar says something amazing. The Zohar says, quite beautifully, the Zohar writes, Va'omar, Va'ilech Lemasov, Minegev Ad Beisel, Look at the second line right after the comma, number 12. So the Zohar makes an amazing observation. The Zohar says, "Vayelech lemasaov lemasao mibayle." So the Zohar brings down that there's a syntax issue. The pasuk should have said, "Vayelech lemasao." Masao means he went according to his journeys. His journey meaning possessive singular. Masa'ov means what? Their journeys. It's plural. Masa'ov. Hamasa'im shalom. They went back according to their journeys. Why the, it's not a right English, but why the plurality of the word? Right? Why, who's the they? So the Zohar says something amazing. He says, Maila masa'ov elatrein matlinon inun. When Avraham Avinu took his journey, there were two sets of footsteps. Who were the footsteps? Chadidei. One was Avraham Avinu's footsteps, v'chad v'shchinta. And the other was the Ribono Shel Olam's footsteps. Vayelech l'masav, says the Zohar, is Avraham Avinu understand, every single journey you make, you never make it alone. Every single journey you make in life, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I am right there beside you. When you trace back your footsteps, you won't see one set of footsteps. You're going to see two sets. One is yours, and one is mine. Because you never make a step without in life without me right by your side. What does this mean? If you look at the Baal Shem Tov in number 13, the Baal Shem Tov says so beautifully, building on this Zohar. The Baal Shem Tov says in the underlined lines, second line in number 13, Kima, what does it mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu always walks by my side? Kima Shemolech Hashem Yisparach Hasa Adam La'ezah Makom Al Yedei Mavukash Sheyesh La'adam La'zeha Makom. The Baal Shem Tov says something so absolutely beautiful. The Baal Shem Tov says, you know, sometimes in life, we wind up in places, we wind up in situations, and we ask ourselves, how did I get here? And by the way, everyone has one of those moments. And if you don't have those moments, it's a nebuch. You know why? Because if you don't have that moment, it means you probably never charted a course for your life journey to begin with. But if most of us hopefully chart a course, inevitably that one day you wake up and you say to yourself, my gosh, how did I get here? Now, sometimes, by the way, it's, how did I get here? I can't believe I'm so happy. Sometimes it's, how did I get here? I can't believe I'm so miserable. Sometimes it's, how did I get here? And it's kind of in between, like, I just really never thought my life was going to go down this way. When I envisioned my life, I had such a different plan. And yet, amazingly enough, I've had all of these different twists and turns. The Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh says something amazing. No, that wherever you are, it's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs you to be. There is no such thing as a person winding up somewhere. There's no such thing as a person getting lost in life. But even when we get lost, that getting lost is by design. Wherever I am in life is exactly where HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs me to be. Look what the Baal Shem Tov says. He says, if I am in a particular life situation, I'm in a particular place, and by the way, place could either be geographic or emotional location, that is where God needs me to be. Now, what does that mean? Wherever I am is where I'm supposed to be. So I want to be clear. First of all, wherever you are is where you're supposed to be now. It doesn't mean you're supposed to be there tomorrow. It doesn't mean you're supposed to be there next year. But the idea that Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh is saying is, you never wind up where you are in life by accident. HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts me where I need to be for one of two reasons. Either because there's something in this situation that will allow me to improve myself, or because I have the ability to improve something in this situation. So, Kadosh Baruch Hu places us exactly where we need to be, either because there's something here I need in order to grow as an individual, or there is something here that is broken that only I have the ability to fix. So the Baal Shem Tov comes back and says, that's the meaning of the pasuk. Vayilech l'masav means what? Do you think Avraham Avinu's journeys went according to plan? If you were to give Avraham Avinu a grade, Avraham Avinu 175 years old, if you were to give him his life review, his post-life review, what grade would you give him? A, of course. Everybody always says A, right? Wonderful. Such a tzaddikim. No. The truth is you would give him an F. And I'll tell you why. If you, Avraham, what did you want to accomplish? You wanted to change the world. Avraham, did you change the world? Did Avraham Avinu change the world? No. No, he didn't. He changed the world. How many people, when Avraham Avinu died, how many people were impacted by him? How many? One. You know who the one was? Yitzchak Avinu. You know, Rav Soloveitchik once gave a shiur. I'm sorry? Sarah was dead. Sarah was dead already. I don't mean to sound insensitive, but you know, So just so you understand, you know, Rav Soloveitchik one time was giving a shir at the Rabbinical Council of America, the RCA convention, and he was speaking to a group of Rabbanim, and he was talking about the need for Rabbanim to pay attention, to be attentive to their own families. Sometimes the son in the Rabbanim says, saving the world, and you forget to save your own. And the Rav says, you know, the Ribbono Shel Olam tells Avraham Avinu a very important idea. He says, Ki bi Yitzchak yikari lecha zara. At the end of the day, the only person who's really going to mourn your loss is going to be your Yitzchak, is going to be your son. Everyone else will shed a tear and then they go on with their lives. That's the derech of the world. But make sure you put your efforts into the one person who's really going to miss you when you're no longer here. Ki bi Yitzchak yikari lecha zara. Avraham Avinu has an impact on Yitzchak. Now, speaking seriously, Avraham Avinu, of course, has an impact on humanity. Avraham Avinu is the father of all of the major faiths. Avraham Avinu is, that's why, again, every major faith traces itself back to an Avraham Avinu. Everyone comes from Avraham. That's what it means. Chazal says, Avraham's going to be Av Hamon Goyim, a father of a multitude of nations. Avraham Avinu is the father of Judaism, is the father of Islam, is the father of Christianity. He's the father of all of these things. Every type of ruchnius that exists, major ruchnius that exists in this world, comes from Avraham Avinu. That impact was later on in his life. But at the end of the day, if you ask Avraham Avinu on his deathbed, did you accomplish what you wanted to accomplish in this world? He would have said no. Now, he was wrong. He did accomplish it. Just not in the timeline that he thought he would. He thought he would change the world while he was alive. He didn't change the world when he was alive. He changed the world after he died. Sometimes we put in an incredible amount of effort and the fruits of that labor are only felt when we're no longer here. Avraham Avinu was a resounding success. The tragedy is, I don't know if he felt like a success when he drew his last breath. I don't know that he felt like a success when he left this world, but he was. He was. As he looks down from Shamayim, he's able to see. He's able to see our shir. He's able to see the Torah. He's able to see the yeshivas. All of this is him. All of this is him. Avraham Avinu lives a life of masa'av. How many times does Avraham Avinu wind up in a situation? And he probably asked himself, how did I get here? I married my beloved wife, Sarah. And what was their dream under the chuppah? I guarantee you, like most people's dreams under the chuppah, to have a family, to settle down, nothing. Nothing. No settling down. Lech lecha, he's wandering around. Remember, does Avraham Avinu even... They never even build a house. Remember again, Avraham Avinu lives his life in an ohel, in a tent. It's always the tent. And we pick up the tent, we move here. There's never a home. There's never a white picket fence. Right? There's never children. There's children later on, of course, in his old age. But again, they don't get to grow old together. Sarah Aminu dies under tragic circumstances. Avraham Avinu lives a life of masa'av. I don't know how I ended up here. But the great, amazing, redeeming quality of Avraham Avinu is that wherever he was in life, he knew that it's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu needed him to be. Avraham Avinu understood that even though I don't want to be here, I'm going to try to change these circumstances as quickly as I can and to change my life as quickly as I can. If I'm here, it's because the Ribono Shel Olam needs me to be here. There is no such thing as winding up somewhere haphazardly. If you're in the life situation, the Baal Shem Tov says, it's either because the HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs me to find something in here that could help me fix me, or because there's something here that's broken that I have the ability to fix. Every situation has Kiddusha. Every situation has potential. Every situation has holiness. It becomes my divine mandate to discover that in every single circumstance. If you look at number 15, there's an amazing Gemara, Maseches Sukkah. The Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ragloi debar inesh inon arvin bay. A person, literally a person's feet are his guarantors. How are a person's feet his guarantors? So the Gemara says, La'asar demizboi taman movilin yasei. Wherever you're supposed to be, that's where your feet take you. So watch this. The Gemara tells an amazing story. Hano tarti kushai dahavi kami kami shlomo. Shlomo had two scribes by the name of Elicharav and Achiyah. Yomachad chazi l'malach hamavistav ka'atziv. So one day Shlomo Melech sees the malach hamavist, the angel of death, and the angel of death looked sad. I guess under normal circumstances, he's the life of the party. But today he looks, the malach hamavist looked a little sad. Amalei amayatzi, this malach hamavist. You know what? What's got you down, angel of death? You know, what's business is slow. What's the problem? Amalei, dikaboy minay hani tarti kushay diyasvihacha. So malach says, I'm going to be honest with you. It's the time for me to take the souls of these of your two scribes, Achiyah, Achiyah Shiloni, Achiyah, excuse me, and Elicharav, and I can't take them. Now, Malcolm Ovitz doesn't disclose why he can't take them, but I can't take them. So Shlomelech hears this, and what does he say? He says, Shlomelech hears that they're in mortal danger, and he whisks them off to the city of Luz. Now, without getting into it, but Luz, the residents of Luz, were blessed with almost like immortality, like a type of longevity. When the residents of Luz wanted to die, they left the walls of the city. So Shlomelech hears that Malach HaMavis wants his two scribes, because, okay, I need to get them, I need to whisk them off to Luz. So what happens? He gets messengers, he takes Elicharef and Achia to Luz, and then what happens? Kimatu l'mechuzah d'Luz shchivu. As soon as they reached the gates of Luz, both of the men died. Elicharef and Achia die. Okay, the next day, Shlomelech sees the Malach HaMavis, and what happens? He was laughing. Second to last line, number 15. Amai bedichas. So Shlomelech says, Malach HaMavis, why so happy today? Why are you laughing? Amarlei ba'aser deba minai taman shadrinu. Shlomo, the reason I wasn't able to take the souls of Elicharef and Achia is because not only does a person have an appointed time to die, but they also have an appointed location. And Achia and Elicharef were supposed to die at the entranceway to the city of Luz, but they had no imminent plans to go to the city of Luz. You delivered them to the exact place where I needed them to go. A person's feet are his guarantors. Where you are needed, it is there that they will take you. What's the idea the Gemara is saying? Is anywhere we end up in life. Often we think we're going in one direction, we end up somewhere else. I had these plans, they don't materialize, this materialized. I feel that this is a dead end. This, understand that wherever you are in life, it's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs you to be. Now, I want to be clear. It doesn't mean you shouldn't try to change your circumstances. And it doesn't mean you shouldn't try to extricate yourself from that situation. It doesn't mean you shouldn't try to get back on course. But if you find yourself off course, if you find yourself lost, quote unquote, if you find yourself in a place that you never thought you would end up, just understand you're not there by accident. That's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs you to be. Because there's something in that situation for your self-actualization. There's something in that situation that you have the ability to fix. Take a look at number 16, and with this we'll conclude. This is from a beautiful sefer called Gan HaEmuna. We learn it every morning before our daf Yom Yishir, written by Rav Shalom Arush, who is a Breslov Chassid, and he writes over here something quite beautiful. He says, "B'chol pam," paragraph Aleph. We're not going to get a chance to do all of it, but "B'chol pam shekor la'adam davar lo lefi ritzono." Every single time something happens to me that is not according to my plan, not according to my will, tzarachu lahaktim es hamuna l'seichel. A person has to activate his or her emunah before their intellect, and to make one simple statement, kacha Hashem rotze. This is what the Ribono Shel Olam wants. Now, by the way, but there's more to that statement. This is what the Ribono Shel Olam wants for me, because there's something in this situation that is an absolute necessity for me. Paragraph base. Zeo klal gadol. Ha'emunah tzricha lios tamid lios bereishis ha'machshava kimo shekasev. Reishis chachma. Skip down a little bit. Ulefi sha'adam maschil l'shamish b'seich. Ulehavim ha'shem evin. Ulehagiyah l'maschanos ke'elo acheros. Ha'mavios osa liklos atzaro b'sibos tevios. Listen to this. Sometimes a person suffers. So I don't mean illness right now. I mean like interpersonal suffering. I'm hurt. I'm upset. I was taken advantage of. So a person begins to do what? What's the reflexive reaction to hurt?
Blame.
So what do I do? La Hashem es ploni, es almoni. It's this one's fault. It's that one's fault. Es ishto, it's my wife's fault. Es chamoso, it's my mother-in-law's fault. That's a popular one. Uchidome. Olirdo pesatzmo. Or it's my fault. It's my fault. Now this already is a milo. For a person to say, it's my fault. And a person spends so much energy figuring out, who should I blame? Whose fault is it? Heads are going to roll. Somebody's got to be to blame over here. Somebody has to be at fault. And I'm going to spend all of my energy, all of my time, assigning that blame to figure out, whose fault is it that my life isn't going the way I want? So says the Gan HaEmunah something so beautiful. Chayiv lahaktin es HaEmunah. He says, Shekacha Hashem rotze. Instead of spending time assigning fault, instead of spending time assigning blame, do something much more productive and much more constructive. I'm in this situation because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me in this situation. I was hurt by that individual because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to feel that hurt. Now again, that doesn't exonerate the person, the perpetrator, right? The perpetrator has their own cheshbonus as to they hurt me. But at the end of the day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is allowing me to be hurt. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is allowing me to weather these circumstances. It's because this is where HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me. These are the experiences HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs me to have because there's something in this ultimately that will help with my development, help with my self-actualization because there's something in this process that ultimately, again, will help me fix something either in myself or in my world. Paragraph Gimel. So only once a person stops assigning blame could a person find the ability to grow from all of their circumstances. So if we loop this back together, because I know we're out of time, and we loop this all back together. If you want to know how David HaMelech keeps a positive disposition, despite being actively taken advantage of, actively hurt, actively betrayed, actively undermined at every step of the way, because he realizes that when the Zifim turned him in, what am I going to do? I'm going to be angry at the Zifim? To just vent my fury at the Zifim is to remove HaKadosh Baruch Hu from this picture. I'm going to be angry at Shaul. To get angry at Shaul means to remove God from the picture. I'm going to get angry at my father. To get angry at my father is to remove HaKadosh Baruch Hu from the picture. David HaMelech lived the life of Avraham Avinu. Vayelech l'masav, yes, there have been many difficult and very hurtful and painful journeys. But I recognize that every single journey I never took alone. Every single journey HaKadosh Baruch Hu was by my side. What is HaKadosh Baruch Hu was by my side? That God put me in these circumstances. Why? Because there must be something constructive. There must be something cathartic. There must be something holy, meaningful, and special that I could get from each of these circumstances. That is how David HaMelech weathered. And David HaMelech goes through. This is just the beginning. By the way, when you look back at David HaMelech's life, as we know, the Zifim were like the least of his problems. The Zifim was like a splinter for David HaMelech, dealing with all of the stuff. But David HaMelech internalized this Vayelech Lemasa of mindset. Kacha Hashem Rotzeh. There's always two sets of footsteps. Wherever I am is exactly where I need to be in this present moment. Wherever I am, I'm there. Not by accident, not because someone put me there, not because someone's to blame, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs me to get something from these circumstances. There's something in this situation that I need to fix myself. There's something in this situation that I need to fix my world. That's how David HaMelech was able to maintain this incredible disposition. And this is why David HaMelech begins this kapitel, Lam Natzeach B'Neginos Maskil LeDavid. There is a major life lesson contained in here, and I would venture to say probably one of the most important lessons for successful living. The lesson of Vayelech L'Masa of, the message of Kacha Hashem Rotzeh, the message of you never end up somewhere in life by accident. And you never end up somewhere in life because it's someone's fault. And by the way, you never end up somewhere in life because it's your fault. You may have contributed to it. I may have made some bad decisions along the way. But wherever I am is exactly where HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs me to be in order to self-actualize. Sometimes I'm supposed to stay there. Sometimes I'm supposed to get out of there as quickly as I can. But wherever I find myself, it's never a dead end. It's never a dead end. It's always a new opportunity that is always flanked by those beautiful two sets of footsteps. All right, so stop over here. We'll continue Rez Hashem with Parak Nun Hey next week. Absolutely. So that's not where we're going.